I'm Ann Mish on 103.7 The Beat, the talk of Muskegon. Watch Muskegon, giving you informative information on city topics. And today I have Big Rob with me.
Again.
Because this is part two, right?
Right, part two of our discussion. Because a lot of people didn't know, Ann, that you did all that you do as the city clerk. We left off last time with, I think, marijuana. You said there was so much more with that. Now, I've also learned something else, too. When you have a marijuana license, you can grow the weed at your house?
You have to have a license.
Or is that a separate grow?
No, it's a separate one. But you can grow for yourself and yourself only in your home if you have a permit. The permit is $100. There's an application process. You also do have to get a permit from the inspection department because the inspector and the fire marshal come to your house and they make sure that you have the appropriate electrical. That's always a big part of it. In your home, as well as the correct ventilation for your home, because we want to make sure it's safe. And really how the whole ordinance came about is within a 2-year time frame, our fire marshal had indicated we had 5 confirmed house fires from grows in the home. And when they went in there, the fire department went in there, they saw some very disturbing things. And one of them was having children in the house that's not properly ventilated, or having people who are, their circuits were way overloaded and extension cords everywhere and circuit breakers are popping and they're just resetting them over and over again. And eventually you have a fire, and just how unsafe this is, you know. So the whole purpose of the ordinance when we started was just, we wanted to give a safe environment for everybody. That's also why they didn't want grow operations for the 5 patients and yourself, which is 72 plants. Somebody who is licensed with the state can have 5 patients. They're allowed 12 plants apiece. Plus, you can grow for yourself. That's 72 plants. They don't want those in homes in a residential area where you have, you know, kids by you, and just that's not appropriate. And then, you know, it's better to have that in a commercial area. So it's like in our business district, you can be out at the industrial park. There's several places. In fact, I have a marijuana map in my office that I can actually look it up and see where you're allowed to be.
A marijuana map.
It's a marijuana map. That's right. Wow. That's right. Yeah. And you'll appreciate it's all like in green where you are allowed to have it. That's where somebody just had a little bit of fun with me. But yeah. So I help out growers, patients. And just, you know, kind of I give them the rules, the ordinance, and guide them through that so that they can have a safe environment that's legal. What happens if there is a call or something and somebody wonders, or they call the police department because there's maybe a smell or something that they're walking by a building and they report it to the police department. The police, they do go over there, you know, to check out any complaint like that. But typically what they'll do is they'll then call me. And they'll ask me if this address is registered, and I'm allowed to tell them yes or no. I can't share the information on the application until it gets to the point that, let's just say that there's a real legal turmoil. And so this is way down the road, and that's with attorneys involved in that. But I mean, on a normal everyday process, I certainly do not hand over your information. But I can look it up, and I can say, yes, there is a license there to grow.
Now, are you bound, I don't mean to interrupt you, are you bound by the HIPAA laws also? Because of the marijuana medical?
Right. Wow. Because it is about people and patients, and they do have this for a medical reason. So I am bound by that. And I am the only one who actually sees the application. The application otherwise is just locked up with me. And like I said, nobody else is privy to that information. Now, saying that, there are parts of it that I do have to share, because obviously the inspection department can come and inspect your home or your place of business if they don't have an address. So I have to give them an address. But you as the grower can even give me a different contact person that I can give out their information to say, okay, this is your contact person. This is who you're going to meet with, because the grower prefers to remain anonymous, and we can go that way too.
Oh, you can do that too?
Absolutely. It's right in the application that says I prefer to remain anonymous. But in the end, you do have to give me somebody, because you want somebody to be at the building when we have to go and inspect
it. And that's a commercial building.
That's a commercial building,
what
right.
About
Right.
Is it different for residential?
You can do it for residential as well. You can certainly go, and we have that same opportunity where you can put that on there. Now, I'll have the information because obviously I still need to know who has a card in the house. And yes. We do check with LARA, which is the state site, and we just put in your card number, and it verifies for us that you are a current patient. It doesn't give us any information because the state's under the same laws that I am. So I could call them up. It would be like calling the IRS. They're not going to tell me anything about your tax return.
Even though you're the city clerk.
That's right. Oh, yeah. No. It doesn't matter who I was. But no, they're not giving me anything. But they will just tell me the same thing I'll do for a police officer. Yes, that is a valid address who is registered. Yes.
Now, because I know there's a thing with the feds.
Yes.
Because marijuana is not legal.
That's correct.
Federally.
That's right.
It's legal state.
Yes.
How does all of that work?
Well,
I mean,
I'm not the law.
You're
okay,
right.
So what I can tell you just from what I've been told over and over again is that, the federal government could do what they wanted to. And my understanding is they've chosen not to. But they could certainly supersede us and come in at any time. So anybody, and our forms indicate that too. When you sign, there's all kinds of forms you signed for us. And in there it says, we're saying you're okay with us, but we're not telling you that you're okay with the federal government, So that's a whole different, and separate subject. So, like I said, if the federal government decides one day that we're going to come down, they would come down probably on the whole state. I would imagine they're not going to come in and just pick up
a few people in
the state. Yeah, they're not going to do that. I would think it would be a big widespread kind of thing. But, we can't tell you it's okay with the federal government because it's not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, is there a separate, this is a state law and a city ordinance.
Yes.
Can you tell us the difference?
Right. Well, the state law, first of all, none of our information actually supersedes state law. So a lot of times when people hear a dispensary, because that is the title that's used in our ordinance, people think that you can just sell to anybody with a dispensary because that's what a dispensary would. In our definition, what they wrote in the city ordinance, it says dispensary, but for us, a dispensary still means your five patients and yourself. You can only issue to those five patients. You cannot give to other people. If you are doing that, you are breaking the law.
Now, do you have to, if you're a licensed grower,
mm-hmm.
I mean a licensed patient.
Yes.
I should say. Can you... you have to have a separate license to grow the marijuana?
You get a permit from the state of Michigan that actually says if you're allowed to grow for yourself, yeah.
Okay, so there's a different licensing for growing. Am I correct on that?
Definitely for growing for other people, yes.
But
yes.
For yourself?
See, you're going to like... Now I got to pull out the paperwork here.
And that's what you see here.
I am. I'm looking.
She is actually looking. I guess I gave her a tough one this time.
You did. Because people, I don't want to say, do this. And I'm like, no. I can tell you that the state of Michigan is the one who licenses. And on the back of the card will tell me if you are allowed to grow for yourself. I can tell you that's what the back of the card says, that when I see it, when somebody gives me a card, it says that,
so
yes.
So it's not normal for people to be able to smoke the weed or carry the weed with them, but they're not always permitted to grow.
Right, because, you can be a patient. So if you're a patient, then somebody else also has your card that says that they are authorized to grow for you, and your name is on their card. So when a grower comes in, he typically has five cards with him, his five patients from the state of Michigan, that I can actually get their number right off of there to verify with LARA that they are patients. And so on the back we'll say, do they grow or not? Because you wouldn't want a patient to have one that says they can grow for themselves and then have somebody else have their card that says they're growing for them too.
Right.
Yeah, that would be an issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's two different types.
I believe
of,
so. Don't
don't quote you on that right now.
I am.
Right now,
yes.
We're not quoting Ann on that. She's going to research it and let us know next time.
Before you ever do anything and you're in the city of Muskegon, come see me, all right? We'll make sure we get this all clarified. But
all
yes.
cleared up.
Yes, yes.
Now,
yes.
Who decides on the city ordinances? Do you have a hand in that, or is that done by city council and all of those guys and stuff?
In the end, our city commissioners are always the ones who approve any changes to our city ordinance or adopt a new ordinance. But typically how it starts out, it could be businesses that come to us or residents, or it could be a need that staff sees, because staff could be working with an issue and see it as a recurring issue or something that needs to be addressed. So we go, well, how are we best to address this? And as we start talking, sometimes we see a need to actually modify or change an ordinance, because sometimes ordinances can be from the 40s or 50s, and
correct.
Maybe it worked all the way up until then, but now it's not going to work for us. So now we need to change it. So we'll, you know, brainstorm some ideas. Some of it might be contacting other cities, see how they handle those situations, you know, getting out on the internet and checking. And then we go through our city attorney. So then we have an idea of what we want to do. We present it to our city attorney and make sure that legally we can do what we're thinking we want to do. After we put a proposal together, then we share it with the city commission and we explain to them why we're asking for this and what the need is. And then it's ultimately up to the city commission whether or not to adopt it.
Now, what, for people who don't know, mm-hmm. what is the difference between a city ordinance or an ordinance for the city versus a law?
Well, you mean like the state law. You're right.
What's the difference?
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, they're actually the same. One of the differences would be what kind of ticket you're being written mm-hmm. if you're violating. You know, you could get a civil infraction from the city, and that's because you're violating one of the city ordinances. That's a very good possibility. And then with the law, of course, you're getting a different kind of civil ticket that you get from there. There's, you know, in my eyes, they're both the same. I don't want to have either. I can
right.
tell you that. I don't want right. to have either one of them. The city cannot supersede what the state has, so we cannot override it. That's one of the other parts of it too. So, you know, the state law is always above, trumps, you know, pretty much everything that we do, unless it's written in there that the city can define it, or even more, you know, they might
enhance
sometimes
it or something.
They can do that. But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know the differences
yep.
of it all and stuff. And I know there was a big issue about the weed, the marijuana. I just keep saying weed,
yep.
marijuana. The whole growing versus the people that can carry it and smoke it and do whatever they want to do for municipal purposes. Now,
mm-hmm.
how hard was it for you to understand the HIPAA laws? Because I know that's a whole different set of issues
right.
in dealing with this. Because I know
yep.
Nurses, doctors, any medical facility, they fall under that HIPAA law,
right.
basically.
Right.
So how hard was that for you to understand that?
I've been familiar with HIPAA laws, first of all, on a personal level. You know, we all have
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
have that, and I have a son with a who's in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, working throughout the medical on a personal note, you know, very mm-hmm. familiar with it. Also, we have I worked at a different city, and I was in charge of reimbursements of medical expenses. So I had mm-hmm. employees' medical information, so I was under the HIPAA there as well. And HIPAA can be complicated, but on the short side of it, it just means that simply I just can't share anything about you. So the more I just like, as long as I keep everything locked up and I keep my mouth shut, that's how easy HIPAA can be for me. And the only time I, you know, turn that around is when an attorney or a judge or somebody says, we need this information, then I release it. But other than that, it all stays locked up and nobody gets it. It's kind of like I treat it like our meetings. We have closed session meetings and we have minutes. After those minutes are adopted, the only person that can order those minutes to be open is a judge. And I just consider HIPAA to be along those lines. Nobody else gets to see it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So a judge is the only one that can order you.
When it comes to closed session minutes, yep. And after a year and a day after the meeting, I am to destroy them too. So it's usually a document that I write and I sign and I seal, and then a year and a day later, I destroy them.
And you have to remember this. Do you have a little system or something?
Oh, that one is just...
That goes off?
That's
like,
ingrained.
And you got to destroy some documents.
Yeah. Well... those are locked up, and you know, and I, you know, periodically, you know, you go up there and you look, and I have the dates written on the outside of the envelope. So when I see one, and I'm going, oh yeah, I've got to destroy that in like 3 weeks or a month or something like that, and
right.
You just take those out, and it goes right in the shredder, never gets opened.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yep, they're gone. Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So what else does our city clerk does for this great city and this great community?
One of the things I wanted to talk about, only because this just happened like today, and this is something I've been fighting for our residents really hard for, and unfortunately we lost late last night, and that is, this is getting back to elections.
Mm-hmm.
The straight party ticket.
Yes.
You know how when you can go in November on the big election and you can vote straight party, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian. And when you do that, it marks, you know, the president, your state senators and your representatives. And it goes all the way down the line, you know, Democrats, Republicans, whatever. You can just mark one of those lines. And so if you want to vote for one party, you can just do that with one single vote. Late last night, they got rid of that, the legislatures. It was primarily Republicans who did that. And I can tell you that your clerks fought a really hard battle, and we tried really hard. I've got a hold of our senators, our representatives. I can tell you that our Democratic representatives voted in our favor. Republicans did not. They decided this was a pretty contentious thing. What we tried to get in the meantime, we asked, if you're going to do this, could you give us a no reason AV is what it's called. And it's an absentee ballot where you could actually just apply for an absentee ballot without any reason. Right now, currently, we have 6 reasons. You have to meet one of those criteria to get an absentee ballot. But we asked, can you give us, where it just means you don't have to have a reason. You can come in and just say, I want an absentee ballot. I don't want to go to the polling location, and I can do that. And we had it tie barred so that if you were going to approve one, you're going to approve the other. Although I can tell you that when it got to the Senate, they also changed that language to say that you had to come in to the clerk's office to apply for that absentee ballot in person. So they really kind of took away the intent, but at least it was giving us something to offer the voters.
Right.
And they managed to take away that tie bar last night and didn't address that part at all, and went ahead and removed the straight party ticket. What does that mean for our voters on election day?
Yes.
Longer lines, definitely, because you're not going to just be able to mark, you know, and say, I want to vote all Libertarian. You're
right.
Not going to be able to do that. You can still just vote for one person. You can just vote for president, and it's going to count. You can just vote for president and your representative and vote a question. It's going to count. You know, there's no doubt about it. You're just not going to be able to come in and vote your entire ballot by marking a straight party ticket.
Okay.
And that's going to be, for some people, that's going to be a lot harder. Some people, because you're going to, so people are going to take longer in the voting booth. I have a minimum of 20 booths at every single precinct when it comes to a presidential election in each one. But if you've got a long ballot, it's going to take you a while, and now you're not going to have some other options. And so that's where I would like to offer the absentee ballot to people, you know, so just to say I don't want to stand in an hour-long line. So that only just happened. I've already let our commissioners know. I can tell your commissioners, in fact, one of them even emailed our governor and CC'd me on that today, you know, because
right.
The governor has to sign it still. I've heard that he, you know, plans to do that, but he hasn't actually signed it. But I'm preparing now for the worst,
right.
And just moving forward. So I've told my commissioners I'm going to order more booths out there in the precincts. There's a couple of precincts that I might need to move because they're smaller,
right?
And I need more room so I can give you more booths. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm not going to be able to fix it, but I'm going to try to make it as the best I possibly can for our voters, because I want everybody to come and vote. And I can tell you, I went through in the last several years, over 50% of our voters vote by straight party.
Wow.
So if that tells you the impact that it's going to have, it's huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very huge.
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of it is the inner city. And, you know, the east side, they vote straight party. And I'm frustrated by it, but there's, you know, I have to move on. And now I just have to look at how I'm going to, how we're going to
work on it. Fix it and so, work on everything.
Yep. I had my tantrum late last night. So now I'm in the fixing mode. So we're going to, believe me, I'm going to do everything I can to make it as painless as possible. And hopefully the voters won't even notice. That's my goal.
Right. Now, absentee ballot.
Yes.
You said there was a change, correct?
Well, we tried for a change.
But
the Republicans decided they don't want that. They want to keep where you have to come in and you have to mark a reason. And your reason could be, I am 60 years of age or older, means you're qualified. I am physically unable to attend the polls without the assistance of another. I will be out of town on election day. I can't attend the polling location because of my religion. I am in jail waiting arraignment, but I haven't been arraigned yet. So it means I haven't been convicted. If you've been convicted, you can't get an absentee ballot. So if I get an application, which happens occasionally, and it's addressed from the Muskegon County Jail, what I'll do is call the county clerk's office, ask them if they have been arraigned, have they been sentenced, and if they indicate they have not, then we issue one. If they have, then we don't. Simply, you're not allowed to vote while you're in jail.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. And then our last
reason. I never knew that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So felons can still vote in the state of Michigan.
They absolutely can. There are some states you can't. Yeah. In Michigan, you can, because we do get that confusion sometimes where people think you can't. And I know California is one of them. Once you're a felon, you can. But here, you absolutely, as long if you're not in jail, you can vote.
Jail or prison.
Yep. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes. And then if you are an election inspector and you're working at a different precinct than where you live, you're also allowed to get an absentee ballot. So that's your six reasons. So you have to fall under one of those six.
And do they have to come in and show you an airplane ticket or anything like that?
There is absolutely, positively no proof. And what it says is, I expect to be absent from the community on the day of the election.
Okay.
If you work in Grand Haven and you expect to be there all day, maybe you possibly could be working overtime, know, or something, and you don't think you're going to make it home, you are absent from the community. And you can come in and you can get an absentee ballot. Absolutely.
Now, that's something they have to physically come in and do?
No.
Or is that something that they can do online?
They can actually call us up. You can call us or you can go online and request an absentee ballot application, and we will mail it to you. Now, the only difference, if this is your first time registering to vote and you registered online and you haven't been anywhere physically, you do have to come in physically one time, that first time only, if you're under the age of 60. So, and that usually happens with the college kids who go and register somewhere. They register online because kids, they do everything online. They're way advanced. But they have to go to the polling location, or they have to come to me in front of me and ask for an absentee ballot just that first time. Then it takes off that little clicker that I've got in my program that says, okay, we've seen them. There is an actual body. We saw their driver's license. They do exist. And then after that, you don't have to do that anymore.
Oh, okay.
And we also have a permanent absentee list. So anybody who wants to be on there, you call us up, you request to be on the permanent absentee list. Every single election, you are going to get an absentee ballot application.
Automatically.
And if you don't want to vote, you just simply throw that application away. Or if you want to vote at the polling location the next time, say, oh, I might be gone, I might not be gone. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I feel like going over there, sometimes I don't. You just like throw it away, or you can vote it, or you can send it back to us, and it all works.
Free service offered by the city and your office.
Positively free. The only difference is when you mail us back your ballot, you have to put a couple of stamps on it.
Oh,
we don't
absolutely
put the stamps on. I know. Yeah. Which we have people.
Yeah.
You know, it gets pretty costly. In a big election, we can give out over 3,000 absentee ballots. And we do have about 1,700 people on our permanent absentee list right now who asked to be on that. So every single election, we mailed that many people out. But then we typically get back on smaller elections, maybe 1,000 absentees. But on big elections, like I would expect for presidential, we'll be closer to the 3,000 mark.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, another thing, city ordinances. Now, I know you broke it down before, but just for the listeners,
okay,
where can we get a copy of the city ordinances?
Oh my gosh. You know, a few years ago, our IT department, which I can't stress how awesome and wonderful they are, and I should have Jim Mauer, our IT director, come in sometime, or Jason Bowes, or Mike Vandermolen. And I have to put in a big plug for them because they're the ones who actually make us all look good. They're the guys in the basement that nobody ever sees.
Wow.
They're the ones who really make us shine. If you go to shorelinecity.com, up in the top right-hand corner, there is a, well, they've actually moved it over a little bit, but it's called Documents. You see that? You click Documents. When you click it, all of a sudden you're going to see all of these icons show up. And you're going to see City Commission Packet. You will see Planning Commission. You'll see HDC for Historic District. And you're going to see ordinances. There's all kinds of lists. When you click on those, you are going to get all the minutes that we have for any of those board meetings. And I think it goes back now like 4 years because that's how long we've been doing it on that, where so everybody can see it. Same thing with a commission packet, you can see. But anyway, if you click on city ordinances, you're going to be able to get the entire thing, including our charter. And there's even a way to search it. So you can say, narrow my search. I use this all the time. When you call me up and you ask me, Ann, do we have an ordinance on such and such? I'm going to the same place I would direct you to. I go right there and I'm going to go, yeah, you know, about dogs. Are dogs allowed to bark at 2 o'clock in the morning? So I'm going to like look it up and say noise, animals, and I can narrow it down and I can get right to it. But it's a fantastic way to be able to look up and know what the law is. The book, which we don't even have a physical book anymore because,
oh, you know, really?
Yeah, no, we don't even have one. It was so huge and encumbering, and it changes, you know, and so you never know if a book has been updated or anything. Well, with the website, it's always updated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So those city ordinances that's on the website, we can go,
people
in Muskegon.
Absolutely.
You can go to Shoreline City.
ShorelineCity.com, and you go to, and you click Documents. And when you go, that it says Document Search, I believe is the actual title of it. And you can go there and you can search anything. And again, you can search those commission meeting minutes, see what's happened in the last few years. Somebody says, oh, you know, in fact, I had somebody who sent me an email yesterday and said, when did we adopt the parking or ordinance ban? You know, which I knew it was December of last year. We adopted a new parking ordinance ban. I just put that in there. I was able to send them the link right there that actually showed it to them so they could see it.
Now, what is happening this year? Because, you know, of course, we don't have any snow.
Yeah.
Are people having to park on terraces and things like that now? Because I don't remember seeing anything about it. Do you know?
So that you're telling me that you don't like get on my Facebook page where I post all that information like over and over and over again.
I'm sorry,
now I'm like really hurt because I listen to your shows.
I'm
and
sorry.
You're now telling me.
I'm going to send you a friend request right now on Facebook. So
please
that,
do. Yes.
So that I will know. Because my son asked me last night, well, Dad, can I park on the street? And I'm like, it's December. Usually, no.
Yeah. You're
after
right.
2 o'clock.
Okay. So we did change it last year where we made it. It's actually December 15th. The parking ban started till the end of February. It's called the end of February because sometimes there's a February 29th that there will be next year. That you cannot park in the street from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. And I know, again, I'm not the police department and not the enforcement person when it comes to this, but I will tell you from all the conversations over the many years that I've been around, the point is because you could park out there, you know, it could be, 9 o'clock at night and everything is great and dandy. And in the middle of the night, a snowstorm comes and then the plow trucks have to come out and they have to clear it. And so anyway, there's always a strong, this is the date. That date is December 15th. We put out all kinds of things. What the police department has publicly said is that they are giving out warnings this week. So when there is a car out there, you're going to get a little ticket on there that says, this is your warning. You can't park there. So during this time, you are allowed to park on your terrace. So those people who don't have, you know, a driveway, who don't have access to it, can park on their terrace. We ask that you park on your terrace and your terrace only. You can, if you park on somebody else's terrace, you really should do that only with permission, because that's when, and that's where we've had issues have come up in the past, where, you know, you get neighbors who are upset and frustrated. You can imagine if you put a lot of work into your yard and then you look out aside one night and there's somebody parked on basically what feels like it's your yard, that little terrace area between the sidewalk and the street.
Ann, I have a real big problem with y'all owning the terrace and telling me I got to mow the grass. I don't know if I ever told you that.
This is so unfair.
Y'all
should
have seen the way Ann looked at me when I said that. Now,
I would have kicked you if you were my husband. Right now, but.
The city.
Yep.
Actually owns the terrace. But
I know.
Y'all telling me I have no other choice but to cut that grass and I don't own it.
this is not an excuse, but I'll tell you, just about every community that I know does, first of all, has that rule. Okay, so it's not just the city of Muskegon. Let's just point that out to everybody. This is not a city of Muskegon problem. It's everybody problem. You're right. And there will be people, we want you to maintain it. And I'm not going to disagree. Is it fair or is it not fair? You know, there will be people who would probably sit here and like give you 20 reasons why that's fair. Yeah. And I'm not going to do that because I understand the other side of it too, because I'm also a homeowner. And I also know that, you know, I have sprinkling out on my terrace, but I also know if the city has to come through and do something, they could easily tear out my sprinkling system. And those issues have come up. You know, you get a break out there and they come and they say, well, you know, it's our terrace. I know. Don't.
The trees.
Oh, yeah. What if
I don't want trees on the terrace?
Well, if it's dead, you can call the Department of Public Works at 724-41. You are being so unfair. 724-4100, and they'll come out and evaluate the tree. And if it is dead, you know, the city will remove it. If it's on the terrace, they will remove it. And sometimes on our Facebook page, people will send me a photo of a tree and show, they're like, look at this, and I'll send them back something. I'll say, what's the address? And then I'll contact our Department of Public Works and I'll send them the photo and say, you know, a resident sent me this. Can you go check it out? And they will. And if it really is a valid claim that it's a dead tree on the terrace, and it's, you know, they'll take it down. If it's a live tree, they actually have a policy that says we don't remove living trees. Like,
even if you want it off, you don't want to rake leaves no more. So you want this tree gone.
Yeah, you can't do that.
But I can't remove it because I don't own it.
No, that's right.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
I wish you guys could see Ann's face right now. So it's City of Muskegon Government Facebook, right?
Yes, that's me. Yes.
That's you, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
I just liked your page.
Thank you.
And stuff like that.
Thank you. City of
Muskegon Government on Facebook.
We have almost 16,000 followers.
Okay, you got one more now.
There we go. even with the oh my gosh, are you kidding me? See, we are out of time. Look what he did.
And we just enjoying
Look
ourselves.
Look what he did. I know. Oh.
But this is what happens when you invite me in.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
I just looked over there.
I did too. All right. Well, I got to wrap this up. I'm in trouble now.
You're good. You're good.
This is Ann with Watch Muskegon, Watch Us Go. And thanks for tuning in and listening to all the information we have on city services and any other public information we can give you. And if you have any suggestions, always feel free to give us a call. And until next time.